At Subway, start 2010 right with surprisingly low-fat choices. The Piled High Subway Club or Turkey Melt, fresh toasted under bubbly cheese. Both are part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal, a simple way to enjoy eating better. Subway, eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, welcome to part two of the NFL Mega Playoff Podcast. If you missed part one, Cousin Sal and Mike Lombardi, that's up there on iTunes and on ESPN.com. Here's part two. Let's go to the Football Outsiders editor-in-chief first. Aaron Schatz. Are you the editor-in-chief? What's your title?
Editor-in-chief, president, majordomo.
CEO?
CEO, yeah, we're a corporation, yeah.
Czar?
I don't think I'm a czar, really.
All right.
I don't really rule by fiat. It's more of sort of a benevolent dictatorship.
Well, as Apollo Creed taught us, you can never have enough nicknames and titles. Don't stop at three. Don't stop at four. Keep going.
This is true. Listen, before we get into it,
Before we get into it, I got to say that you're in the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I wanted to mention something that I told the Football Outsiders guys that I would save it for your podcast because it seemed appropriate.
Mm.
I want to talk about the Vikings, quote unquote, running up the score yesterday.
Okay.
The reason why is because once it happened, I waited for all of those voices who excoriated the Patriots 2 years ago to come out of the woodwork and tear the Vikings to pieces.
Yeah.
And while some people definitely expressed that they were upset with the Vikings strategy, Terry Bradshaw said that, Peter King said it in his column today, I did feel like a lot of the people who were so angry at the Patriots 2 years ago didn't seem to feel the same way this time. And I realize this is obviously Patriots homerism coming from two Patriots, two Patriots fans. But geez, man, treat all 32 teams the same. If it's bad to run up the score when one team does it, it's bad when another team does it. Not to mention, I would like to point out, the example that always gets to me about 2007 was when the Patriots went for it on fourth down and ran the ball into the end zone with their backup fullback, Kyle Echol, with a 14-point lead. Compare that to this time when the Vikings, with a 24-point lead, left all their starters on the field and threw a touchdown pass from their starting quarterback to their starting tight end. It's just a completely different thing. And, you know, yet I think that there hasn't been quite the same outrage, and it's just annoying.
Well, you left out the part that it was a play action pass, which to me is even more of an F you. It's like, oh, we roped you in.
Yeah, there were a tight end. I will say there were a couple of those where you had to say to yourself, I'll bet you Favre audible to that one.
I almost tweeted after, and I almost tweeted, wow, I can't believe Belichick ran up the score. And then I was like, you know what, forget it. It was 2007, it was 2 years ago. But I did find myself getting madder and madder about it as the day went along. And
right, and that's anything. The one thing you didn't hear anybody say, by the way. Nobody said Brad Childress ran up the score.
Yep.
Nobody said this was Brad Childress's decision, like he has something personally wrong with Wade Phillips that he had to, like, give it to him.
Yeah. Whatever. People hated the Patriots.
It's just weird, man.
They continue to hate them.
I know. Yeah. It's strange.
Well, now we're gone.
But
now we're irrelevant.
Well, when it doesn't take away from the Vikings playing really, really, really well.
Yeah. And now I guess you could say the Jets are now starting to emulate our decade last year. They're starting the new decade as the old Patriots.
Well, we'll have to see about that.
We'll have to see.
Listen, you can't compare. You get a little tired of everybody comparing every possible upsetting team. Every Cinderella gets compared to the 2001 Patriots. I mean, this is a team with very different strengths and weaknesses. This team has a much better defense than the 0-1 Patriots had.
Better running game.
Better running game, worse passing game. It's a younger team. It's not put together with a bunch of veteran free agents in quite the same way.
Well, you can't compare
every Cinderella to the 0-1 Pats.
No, but here's the good comparison that I think is, other than the whole AFC thing and beaten down franchise thing, they did get quietly better in that last 6-7 games, and then, you know, everyone was like, they're playing crappy teams, whatever. I was one of those people. But it does appear like they gained momentum, and if you remember the Patriots, the best thing that ever happened to them was losing that Rams game. Kind of kicked them into gear in 2001.
Yeah, it appears like they gained momentum, but let's not forget that in Week 15, they blew a lead in the fourth quarter to Atlanta and lost that game that they desperately at the time thought they had to have.
And they thought the season was over.
So momentum, I mean, you know, there's a limit. I mean, it's not like they blew out teams for all these weeks in a row. I mean, they had some bad games there, and they had some bad games in the middle of the season, too, weeks 10 and 11. If they're anything like any surprise team of recent years, it might be the 0-3 Panthers, because they're so defense and running game based.
That team was a little more explosive.
And they have, yes, that team was more explosive, certainly passing-wise. But they would also throw more interceptions. But you had the similar duo of the veteran running back with the youngster. And that team was less about blitzing and more about the front four getting to you with Julius Peppers and Rucker. And they didn't have a cornerback, certainly, that was anywhere near as good as Darrell Revis. Against Charles Woodson, but him winning Defensive Player of the Year is sort of ridiculous.
That's another comparison maybe you want to make, Ty Law and Revis.
Oh, God.
Come
Revis
on.
Is better than Law.
I know he was, but come on. It's Ty Law, for God's sakes.
Revis is better than Ty Law ever was.
And Miss Sanchez, the young quarterback, who they're kind of afraid to let him spread his wings. Reminds me a little of Brady. The big difference, as you said, though, is that the 0-1 Pats had Antoine Smith. And this team, the Jets, have, you know,
much better
one
running
of the best
game,
1-2
much
punch in the league.
Much better run blocking, although I'll tell you, all season long, they were a much better team running up the middle than they were to the sides. And I had no idea why in the first half they kept trying to go around the end. Their first four runs were right at it. Didn't make any sense. Mm. When they started going up the middle in the second half, that's when their offense came back. And, of course, Sean Green broke the big one up the middle. And that's where they run better, and particularly against the Colts, who are a defense that is based on speed and agility. You want to stuff them up the middle. You don't want to try to go outside and try to, like, beat Colts linebackers to the corner. It's a lot easier to stuff it up the middle on their defensive tackles.
Your numbers last week, if I remember correctly, they liked Minnesota a lot, and you were upset that the system liked Minnesota.
Yes, that's the one that they also liked the Jets. And
they liked the Jets.
And I went with the Jets, but I thought my numbers were wrong about Minnesota, but the numbers were right.
And like the Ravens a little?
To cover, not to win.
And then what was the other game? I forget.
They liked all four teams to cover.
The which ones? The underdogs?
They liked all four underdogs to cover last week, yes.
No, but you liked Minnesota, though.
Oh, and to win the game personally, yes. I thought Minnesota, the numbers thought Minnesota would win the game, and I thought Dallas would.
Right. Okay. So the Minnesota thing was interesting because not only did your system tell us the Minnesota, but then also the logic of everybody on the planet likes Dallas.
Well, Dallas, you know, they were the hot team.
Yeah.
Obviously, they had been hot in recent weeks. And when you looked at the Vikings offensive line, the Vikings offensive line played much better in this game than they had in recent weeks. And the Cowboys offense, first of all, obviously you didn't know Flozo Adams would get hurt, but you knew there was a big drop from Flozo Adams to Doug Free. As much as Adams annoys people with the false starts, he's a much better blocker than Doug Free. Second, was Roy Williams on the field?
He was with Sean Merriman. They were in Cabo.
Like, wow. He did not. Was he even targeted once the whole game? So, you know, I mean, you knew it would be tough to run on the Vikings, but I figured they were going to pass on them. But without Adams in there especially, but even when he was in there, the Vikings defensive line just played out of its gourd. And Romo had no time to throw it, so they didn't have time to take advantage of the secondary, which is even worse now that Winfield's so injured he can only play nickel and they have to start Benny Sapp.
So, Saints-Vikings.
Well, now the question is the Saints offensive line. because we know that Bushrod had trouble in those last couple games, and Carl Nix didn't play well against the Cowboys in the game where they blew the undefeated season. And it's the same thing. I mean, Breeze should really be able to take advantage of that Viking secondary if he has time to throw. The question is he going to have time to throw and to let things develop, you know, given that their offensive line is not quite as good as you might think. They're low on sacks because Breeze is really good at getting rid of the ball instead of taking a sack, but that means throwing it away. That doesn't mean completing a pass.
Do you guys keep track of that?
Thrown away passes and complete?
Yeah, when a guy just basically dumping it.
Yeah, but I don't have numbers on that, unfortunately, right now.
I was just curious. Do you have a name for that?
Dump off. I mean, we track passes thrown away, and we track dump off.
See, I've been pushing you for this for a couple of years. I want it to be your nicknames are for...
Hit me
like
up
that.
On it, man.
Let me think about that one, because I feel like the dump-off pass could even have a better name.
It's interesting. Breeze actually has a really good record against zone blitzes, and the Vikings like the zone blitz a lot more than people realize. They really like to drop Ray Edwards back. They'll be curious to see what happens if Edwards can't play.
Because he got hurt. He got hurt. They brought him back in. And he wasn't happy. He came back out.
Right. We're not sure exactly what's going to happen there.
Yeah.
When you look at the matchups, when you look at how well these teams are overall, the Saints are the better team. They have the home field. When you look at the matchups, I don't think it looks that good for the Saints. You think about what the team's weaknesses are. The Vikings have two weaknesses. Their secondary and their running game is really not that good, particularly the blocking.
Which is ironic because they have Adrian Peterson.
Right. But the blocking's been poor.
Awesome.
So when Adrian gets in the open field, he's Adrian Peterson. But he doesn't have as much of a chance to get into the open field as he had in years past. I'm not slagging on Adrian Peterson here.
Right.
Okay. Now, if you think of that weakness being the blocking and trouble, they've had trouble even double teams against good defensive tackles. Well, if there's one thing the Saints don't have, it's good defensive tackles. By far, the biggest weakness of the Saints is run defense, especially up the middle. And it's much weaker than the Vikings' run blocking is. And we know that the Vikings will be committed to the run. And so even though that's a weakness for them, it's almost a strength against the Saints because they'll be committed to it, and it's less of a weakness than it is for the Saints.
And that also could mean longer drives and a slower game and
right.
maybe a lower score and all
right.
kinds of stuff that are bad for the Saints.
So at that point, it turns into, can Breeze, you know, score enough when he's got the ball? And then that turns into, can the line block the Vikings' pass rush enough to give Breeze time? Because if he has time, he should fully pick apart the Vikings' secondary, especially because, you know, I mean, Sean Payton is the king of the mismatch. Everybody moves around. Everybody plays in a different place. He works it to get these great matches. You know, he ended up with poor Carlos Dansby, had to cover Marcus Colston, and he didn't have the quickness to match with him. He had to cover Reggie Bush. He didn't have the quickness to match with him. He's going to end up getting poor Jasper Brinkley stuck on Colston or something, or they're going to end up with Shockey on Benny Sapp. I mean, they're going to end up with matchups that are just going to be ridiculously in their favor if the Vikings pass rush can't get to Breeze.
Unfortunately, your system can't really account for the fact that Reggie Bush came out of a phone booth and became a different person last week.
But who knows what he'll be next week. That's the problem with those phone booth games. You never know if that's a one-week thing or not.
I don't know.
But what you do know is
inexplicable.
You do know that he was better this year than years past, and that they will move him around to put him in advantageous situations, like, for example, as a receiver and getting him matched up against someone like Jasper Brinkley.
What about Sidney Rice destroyed the Cowboys? Do the Saints have somebody that can handle him?
Jabari Greer. Jabari Greer, by our charting numbers, now this is only in a half season because he was injured for the second half of the year. By our charting numbers, which are imperfect but pretty good, the only cornerback better than Jabari Greer this year was Darrell Revis.
Wow.
He was excellent in the first half of the season, and he was pretty good this week too. You saw that one where he broke it up in the end zone for Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah. Well, Larry Fitzgerald didn't have a catch for the first half, basically.
And Tracy
right?
Porter, yeah, he wasn't necessarily. They had Greer a lot on the other side against Breston with like two guys against Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
But Tracy Porter is their other starting corner, and he's been better in recent weeks. They had a lot of injuries in the corners. Both those guys were out for a while in the second half, and that left their depth corners to start, and Gay and Jenkins were not as good. Now, here's the, so if the Vikings spread and go 3 and 4 wide and force the Saints to bring in the deep cornerbacks, well, then, you know, you get Percy Harvard against Randall Gay. That's not a good matchup for the Saints.
But the Vikings are a little like the Pats, right? They don't really change what they're doing every week. They are what they are.
Yeah, they're pretty are what they are, whereas the Saints definitely change what they're doing every 3 minutes.
The Saints are amorphous, yeah.
I mean, I said last week, if the Saints play the Jets in the Super Bowl, it'll be a rematch of Week 4. But Revis wasn't quite Revis yet in people's minds in Week 4.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine the number of different formations Sean Payton will come up with to keep guys away from Revis and open things up by putting guys up against the other Jets.
So, sounds like you're leaning toward the Vikings.
I'm kind of leaning Vikings. The numbers say Saints, but when you look at specific matchups, I'm kind of leaning Vikings.
Special teams?
The Saints can't take Harvin out the way that the Cowboys could because, you know, there's so many touchbacks from their kickoff specialist. So, the Vikings have better special teams than the Saints do. I mean, obviously, Bush, you know, you never know if he's going to have a big punt run back. But Harvin's more likely to have a big punt run back or kickoff run back.
But the one part, I mean, the Vikings on the road, a different team than the Vikings.
And that's the thing that makes me hesitant, yes.
Yeah.
Is that the Vikings have definitely not been as good on the road this year. And you do wonder, also Ray Edwards. So if Ray Edwards is injured, it's a lot easier to pay attention to the Williamses and Allen. And you wonder whether the Vikings can still do their zone blitzes, although Breeze, like I said, has been really good against zone blitzes this year. The other thing is the Saints like to blitz a lot, and Favre actually was much worse against big blitzes this year than he was overall. I actually have these numbers to put them in the numbers crunching for ESPN later this week. But by our charting numbers, Vikings averaged 7.5 yards a play against 4 pass rushers, 6.9 against 5, 5.1 against 6 or more.
Ooh.
And the only team this year that sent 6 or more often than New Orleans was Philadelphia.
Jets. Oh, I was going to say the Jets.
No, because the Jets often will send, they do send 6 a lot, but often they'll send 5, but those 5 will include like 3 defensive backs while 3 linemen drop into coverage. I mean, they do all kinds of wacko things. No one zone blitzes more than the Jets.
Well, we didn't even mention the elephant in the room, Brad Childress, so I don't know if you want to say
listen, I think I like Brad Childress more than you do as a coach. I've definitely,
okay.
I definitely have to say that I like Brad Childress's look more than my other writers who've said all kinds of mean things about how he looked like that scary, you know, neighbor next door who don't want to hear your children.
Yeah.
I don't know. He looks rabbinic to me. So.
Jets, Colts. What are you thinking?
Well, numbers. I mean, listen, the Colts are the better team. I think that this game is, you know, the Colts are the better team. But it's closer than people think. The Jets have a better chance of winning than I think most people think. And I think they'll keep it close even if they lose because that's just their style. Even the first game between these teams was close before the whole Curtis Painter nonsense. And I think that the line, which opened at, what, 8, is too big.
Yeah, it's like 7.5 right now.
I definitely like the Colts to win, but definitely would take the Jets unless that thing gets less than 7. I mean, they keep games close in general, and you know they're going to run, but the Colts' run defense is better than it had been in years past. I get worried about the Jets trying to run outside, which is what they did, not only in the first half against the Chargers. They did that a lot against the Colts in the first game. You want to run that goofy Wildcat stuff and try to take advantage? The Wildcat is meant to take advantage of slow defenders like the ones the Patriots had last year. The Colts don't have slow defenders. They have super fast defenders, okay?
Yeah.
It's not a good thing to run. The option is not a good thing to run against the Colts. I mean, the Dolphins did well with it against the Colts, but that's because the Dolphins do that way better than any other team. And it's much better designed, and it's a much bigger part of their offense, and it's much more based on power than the Jets' little option stuff. The Jets want to run power. Don't do that option stuff or the Wildcat or the Seminole or whatever they call it. If you want to run power, go up the middle. Pull Alan Faneca. Go. Power it. Don't do the silly stuff.
What do you think about the Jets indoor in a dome-type stadium versus outdoors last week?
Well, it'll be I think it'll be hard for Sanchez to get the plays out. And listen, the other big part of this game, to flip around to the Colts offense, is that nobody is better at spreading the ball with multiple receivers than Peyton Manning. He will throw to Reggie Wayne. He will never throw to Reggie Wayne when Darrell Revis is on him. And it won't matter. because unless Lito Shepard has the game of his life, he'll find other guys open. He'll find Dallas Clark up the middle against safeties. He'll find Austin Colley. He'll find Pierre Garçon. I wouldn't be surprised to see Pierre Garçon be the conference championship MVP, if there is such an award. I'm not even sure there's an official one.
Let's hope not.
You know, he's really good at spreading the ball, so you can't shut down their offense with Revis. Now, listen, they were able to do really well against the Chargers offense, despite the fact that the Chargers like to spread the ball around, but that's because Rivers had some passes that were just wacky, and Manning doesn't, you know, Manning's more consistent than anybody else in the league.
A couple of big drops, too.
Yeah. And the other thing I would, I expect a lot more Joseph Addai, because Addai's a much better blocker, and it's going to be important to keep the running back into chip against those Jets blitzes in order to have Manning have the time to find the guys who are not covered by Revis. And you had to love this week when you heard him on the broadcast stream, God darn it, Donald,
yeah. Right.
when he missed
that.
The blitz pickup. That was awesome.
Wait, did your system show anything about if it's two division rivals and they've played pretty close during the season, that translates to a third game?
They're not division rivals.
Oh, you're right. Jermaine has to bleep that.
We'd like to apologize for that, for swearing.
I still feel like the Colts are in our division.
It's been a long time, dude. It's been a long time.
I know, but I still feel like it's like it's Colts, Jets,
like,
Bills,
you
Pats.
You still feel like the Houston Oilers are in our division, too?
No. That's horrible. I can't believe I did that. See, that's what happens when you get old.
They've only played once. It was a few weeks ago. The Colts weren't fully in the game mentally. They only played Freeney on third downs. Mathis didn't play at all. And, of course, the Curtis Painter thing. You did have to like Ryan's comment in the postgame press conference where he said, I hope Santa Claus comes and Peyton Manning doesn't play against us next week. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Do you think if they were division rivals, it would matter?
Games between division rivals that are looked at, put it this way, we have a little thing in our picks against the spread system that when the spread is larger between division rivals, that it says the underdog is more likely to cover. I don't think it makes underdogs more likely to win, but it makes games closer.
I will say that the fact that the Colts were not in our division for most of this decade is we were robbed of some good games.
Patriots still play them every bloody year.
We somehow play them once a year, but I'm saying if it was...
Well, it's because of the first place.
It was
thing.
Twice
first
a year?
Place every year, and they'll be in, next year it'll be in Foxborough for the first time in like 6 years.
Oh, beautiful. We finally caught a break. I hate the divisions. I hate what they did.
You don't like the four-team divisions?
No, I hate them passionately. Hate them.
It really works out well mathematically, though, and you do... Otherwise, it would be hard... I'm not quite sure how they would make it all balance so you'd have enough games against your division rivals. But this way, at least this way they know you have three division rivals. You always play them twice.
I like 30 teams. I think that's the right number.
Well, I happen to think there are more than 30 cities that deserve NFL football teams. I just don't think that Jacksonville is one of them.
I don't think Jacksonville is one of them. And who else can we get rid of? Let's get rid of one more.
Well, Buffalo, but I feel bad for those fans.
Yeah,
hey,
they're the ones who
we're
stayed
not
in town
Buffalo
when everyone else
podcast.
Left.
Joey,
they're the ones who stayed
Joey.
In Buffalo when everybody else left town. You don't want to take the team away from them.
I got to say, I'd be okay with the Rams leaving. First of all, they didn't have that franchise until when? 1985? Something like that? 86?
The Rams moved in 1994.
They lost the Cardinals in 85.
Right.
Something happened in 80. So they've only had that team for 15 years. It was very bandwagon-y. Everybody seemed like they jumped off this decade. That would be my second choice.
Yeah, but historic team. First team to ever have insignia on their helmets when one of their players painted the Rams horns on back in the 50s.
Although, you know what? That would break my rule of if you win a Super Bowl, your city gets to keep the team for as long as you want. So I have to recant.
They do support that team pretty well, too.
Well,
they sell tickets. They support that team.
So there's no way we'll ever get to 30. We'll probably go the other way. We'll go to, like, 36.
Yeah, me and you seem to have a disagreement on this. I favor expansion. I think that people love professional sports. People love the NFL. There's players out there that could play. And, you know, there are cities that deserve teams that don't have them. Every
like
time
what?
You expand,
name two.
Every
name
time
two
you
cities.
Expand, it weakens the talent pool, but that's temporary. Because what happens is that eventually the talent resettles with all the teams, so the teams are really good again. You know, so the talent ends up working out about the same. I know you don't feel it's been that way in the NBA, but it's always been that way in baseball and football.
Well, because the problem in the NBA is that your fortunes hinge too much on one guy.
Right.
And
there's only football, like seven and football and baseball
guys.
Are not like that. So while, you know, whenever you expand, you'll hear there aren't enough quarterbacks for all the teams or there aren't enough pitchers for all the teams in baseball, over a few years, it evens out. It doesn't work that way in basketball because of what you just said.
I could tell you one thing, there's not enough of field goal kickers.
Yeah, no. It's very strange. Field goal kicking percentages have gone up every year for the last few years, and this year they went down. And I feel terrible for Nate Kading. He's really good. And I don't know what happened yesterday. And let's remember, the second field goal was 57 yards.
Right.
57 yards is a field goal the kickers will miss half the time indoors. Okay? Outdoors, they'll miss it over half the time. You really can't fault him for that one. You can fault him for the other two.
I don't know what happened either. And if it came out that there was some contract on his life and he had to play that way, I wouldn't be totally shocked.
I feel really bad for him because from everybody says, he's a really good guy. This isn't like when Vanderjagt honked against the Steelers and we all knew Vanderjagt was a jerk and his teammates didn't even like him. Everybody likes Nate Kading. I've never read anything about him being a bad person, and you feel really bad for him when something like this happens.
Well, guys named Nate and Ben are usually going to be pretty reliable. These are my two most reliable names. You know, you mentioned the field goal kickers last year in 2008, where I remember with the PATs were like, I forget what it was, but I think there was only like four or five missed the whole season.
Yeah.
And this year all hell broke loose. There was at least 20 missed this year.
I don't know what happened. I think it's probably just random fluctuation. We'll have to see. The problem is that when you have one year that seems different, you don't know whether it's random fluctuation or a trend. You need to have two or three years. So I don't know whether this is a trend or just a random fluctuation. And next year, we're going to go back to last year when kickers hit basically everything short of 55.
I wonder if mentally it's one of those things where, like, it goes wrong for one guy, and it's like this little club, and they're like, oh, I don't want to be that guy, and it kind of plants the idea in their head.
I have no idea. It wouldn't shock me. It's definitely the most, you know, solo mental of any, you know, football action that there is.
Well, if the Jets can get through this playoffs with field goal kickers going 0 for 13 against them or whatever.
It won't happen. Bill Barnwell pointed
that would be
out,
amazing.
This is the first time that a team has had five straight field goals against it missed since 2002.
Regular season or playoffs?
Yeah.
Wow.
It just doesn't happen, and the team has no power over it. It's really random.
But the crazy thing about that stat is it's not like these were 40-yarders. I mean, there was three absolute gimmies out of those five.
With a 36, a 40, and a 57 for Kading. And then, yeah, Graham had a couple of closer ones. Yeah.
Graham had a 28 and a 35, and Kading had a 36. Like, you just don't see guys miss those.
Not very often.
Crazy.
Certainly not five in a row, or four in a row, not counting the 57.
So you're leaning toward Jets and Vikings to cover.
I'm leaning towards Jets and Vikings to cover, and I mean, I really have to analyze it more, but I'm kind of leaning towards the Vikings to win, but it's really close. I really like the matchups for the Vikings, but I don't like the road thing. And the Saints are an overall better team.
When does your weighted DVOA rankings come up?
We already published them today, and the order of the last four teams is New Orleans, Indianapolis, Minnesota, and the Jets.
New Orleans number one.
Well, two, because the ratings include the last 14 weeks of play. So it's not necessarily that the last teams are going to be the highest teams in the ratings, because the team that was the best over the last week or two isn't necessarily the best team over the last 3 months. So we still have Baltimore at one, and then New Orleans is two.
Oh, poor Baltimore.
Yeah, they've got to figure out how to stop doing stupid
quarterback
things.
Wasn't healthy. I mean, what can you do?
And
you
you've got to figure
play.
Out how to stop having stupid penalties.
Yes.
But speaking of which, Vincent Jackson's roughing the flag. That was good.
Yeah, I actually agreed with Sims. I think you let that one go. He kicked the flag. I mean, whatever. It was an idiotic play.
He kicked it into Orlando Brown's eye.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
You got it.
All right. That and cleanup, as always, our Vegas insider from ESPN The Magazine, Chad Millman, writes the insider column for us. And more importantly, is friends with Fezzik, who now is really controlling everybody's bets. Chad, what's happening?
How are you?
Fezzik, I think he did well again.
I think he did all right. We know he liked the Jets a lot.
He loved the Jets and he loved the Saints. Were the
he
team
loved
that
the
he
Jets.
Loved.
He loved the Saints. He was lukewarm on the on
Vikes Cowboys, very
the Colts and Ravens, and very lukewarm on the Vikes and the Cowboys.
Yeah,
but I think he was playing bigger money probably on the Jets game and on the Saints game.
He was adamant. Yeah, he was adamant that the Saints was a mismatch, and he was adamant that the Jets Chargers game was a coin flip, he felt.
He was adamant about that, and I was surprised. I know you weren't because you took the Jets, but I had been a huge Chargers backer. I just felt like they were going to kill them. Like, I had no... I feel like I'm in the complete opposite end of the euphoria around the Jets in New York, and yeah. I cannot accept it. So I'm just so against them that I don't believe in anything they're doing, but they were so good yesterday.
Well, you're breaking rule number one for gambling is never get attached either way to a team when you're trying to make money.
I know. It's wrong. It's completely wrong. But it's like it's hard to lose. It's hard not to focus when you're here. So,
well, I broke rule number two yesterday. Sal and I talked about it in part one, but I'll mention it quickly again. So Sal and I, if gambling were legal, we would have wagered on the Saints, Colts, and Chargers money lines. And the plan was to win the first two and then try to middle it with the third game.
If gambling were legal.
If gambling were legal.
Right.
The Jets line moves up miraculously from 7 to 9.
Right.
So now we have the Jets plus 9, but the Vikings killed Dallas so badly that now we're just worried that the home favorites are going to sweep. So we decide, let's wait until halftime.
I was so sure of the Chargers winning after the first three games yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, they were winning by an average of like 17 points or something like that.
Yeah.
I was so sure the Chargers were going to win. I couldn't wait to email you and say what a bad pick you made about the Jets.
Yeah, and you never sent the email.
I didn't send the email.
At halftime... So we're all right, this is great, halftime. And then the Chargers finally realized, it seemed like, that LT was useless. They had Sproles, and all of a sudden they looked like the Chargers again. They ended up missing the field goal, but it looked like they had their mojo. So the halftime line is Chargers by 3. So it basically means if the Jets lose by more than 10, you lose the middle. But if it's 10 or less, you win the middle and potentially save. We ended up not doing anything.
You didn't do anything.
And the Jets came back. Yeah, it was a classic. So the lesson to the young gamblers out there is if you're going to do the middle – just do it. Don't wait. Don't watch a half. Don't do any of that crap. Just do it.
Well, you know what? That's a great segue to this weekend's games.
Yes.
Because I think the wise guys are already thinking about a middle on the Colts Jets.
What do you mean?
Well, I think that I was talking to a guy this morning. This guy has one of the greatest nicknames in all of wise guyhood. Teddy Covers. His real name is Ted Savransky, but they call him Teddy Covers.
That's a great name. I love that.
It's a great nickname. And we were
awesome.
Talking about the Jets-Colts this morning and emailing back and forth, and the money is already, wise guy money is already coming in on the Colts. And I said, why do you think that is? And he said, it's not an opinion play, but they're already expecting the public to come in so big on the Colts during the weekend, they can then play the other side. So they'll have a middle between 7 and whatever the number ends up at on Sunday morning, which you saw against the Chargers. You know, that was a huge two-point swing, that number going from 7 to 9.
Yep.
That was all public money. You know, that's you know, it's public money, and the number going up because the public is, you know, a schmuck like me and thinking the Chargers are going to kill them. And that's the same thing that's going to happen this weekend, and the wise guys are already playing that.
Well, more importantly, the money line went up for the Chargers.
Yeah, well, everything
and it went from
up.
I think it was like plus 240, went to almost plus 300, which is significant if you're betting like 10,000 or something in Vegas.
If you're betting 10,000, everything is significant.
Yes, that's true. So the Jets-Colts line, where did it start? Where is it now? And where do you think it ends up?
I think it started at 7, 7.5. Right now it's around 7.5. I think it could easily end up probably between 8 and 9. Mm-hmm. And I think there'll be a lot of buyback on the Jets from the wise guys going into the weekend, at least by you know, on Sunday, because they're seeing a Jets team that is, like Fezzik said, when like we talked about, and like he told me last week, you know, the Jets defense is great, their running game is great, and it's a lot to ask a team, even a team as good as the Colts that has been great against the spread all year, it's a lot to ask a team like that to cover an 8, 8.5, or 9 point spread against a team that can run the ball so well. And can eat the clock up the way they do, and especially if the when their defense is so good as well. So you're looking at a number that I think the wise guys are going to love come Sunday. That's going to be in the plus 8 or 9 range.
I thought the line was going to be 8.5. I picked 8.5. Sal told me it was 7.5. I was surprised because I just thought that they were going to, because of what you just described.
Right.
So to prevent from people doing what it seems like is going to happen, they just set it at 8.5 and beg people to bet the Jets this week.
I think it's so hard to do that right now. It's just, the defense is so good, and they looked, they played so well. They just showed, you know. And I actually did speak to a bookmaker this morning, Kenny White at Las Vegas Sports Consultants. They're consultants to, you know, hundreds of books in Nevada. And so when he's got like five or six guys, they all do their lines together, and then they send out a number to all the bookmakers, and then those are part of the numbers, part of the reasons why the bookmakers put up the numbers they do. And Kenny told me he actually had the Colts as 8.5, but that a lot of his guys in his office had it at 6.5 and 7, and they ultimately settled, I think, on 7 for the game. But he agreed with you. He thought it was an 8.5 number.
Yeah, because then you throw in the whole tease part of the whole thing.
Right.
That makes it interesting, too. But
right.
The Saints-Vikings line, you know, I don't know if we've talked about this, but I've written about it in my column, that I have the Vegas zone from 4.5, 5, 5.5 are the three numbers. If those are the lines for the football game, that means that Vegas doesn't really know what's going to happen or where people are going, so they throw it in there and then let the public kind of determine
it. That is exactly when I was talking to Kenny this morning. That's exactly what he said. He said they're going to put it out there, you know, let the public play with it a little bit, let the bettors play with it a little bit and see where it goes. He thinks that game will close. It's opened at 3.5. I think it's at about 4 across the board now. There are some offshore books that had it at 4.5. I think that this game is going to stay where it is all week. I don't think it's going to go anywhere higher than 4.5. I don't think it's going to go anywhere lower than 3.5. I think it'll probably close at 4. When I was talking to Teddy Covers, he said that the game, you know, that right now the bettors are more impressed with Minnesota beating Dallas than they are with the Saints beating Arizona. So if there's any money, it's a little bit on the Vikings. But this game, to me, has two-way action, the same way that the Saints and Cards did this past weekend, in which no wise guy is going to come in one side or the other heavy. It's going to pretty much be guys making their plays solely based on their individual opinions. There's not going to be any steam plays this week.
So you don't think there's any way that rises to 6 by Sunday?
Well,
that's the one scenario I could see, is that line going up because people start talking to themselves into the Saints, and the Vikes haven't won anything on the road. Favre and Childress on the road. The dome's going to be loud. Maybe that climbs a little bit.
I think the dome might be the biggest factor. I think the dome is why the game even went out at 3.5 and 4, because yeah. you're basically saying that these teams are pick 'em on a neutral field, and that you're giving the Saints the advantage because of the dome. And so it could go up, but I just feel like the Vikings were so impressive against the Cowboys, and I don't think most people are thinking about, you know, whether or not the Vikings play well on the road. I think most people are thinking the Vikings have Brett Favre. The Vikings just beat the most public team there is in the Cowboys. So if they're going to go to play the Saints, as impressive as the Saints were, more people are going to be impressed with Minnesota beating Dallas. And so the number will probably stay, to me, it'll stay in the 4 to 4.5 range.
I picked 3.5 for that game. And I just thought that seemed like the logical line. Yeah, because they're basically even teams, and I think normally you give the home team 3, but the dome, I'm giving them an extra half point.
They are actually across the board even. If you look at their yards per play, they're even. If you look at the, you look at the rush offense, they're just about even. It's, you know, if you look at all the parameters and all the metrics that a lot of the wise guys look at, then you are talking about two exactly even teams. It's a hard game to get an opinion on, as opposed to the Jets-Colts, where I think all the wise guys are going to be thinking the Jets, at whatever the price is come the weekend, they're going to play that one pretty big.
Colts, Saints together, Moneyline parlay, seems like it would be just about even.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
could be an interesting play.
It's probably a very good play. I've turned into a huge Jets fan right now. Like, I'm thinking the best play on the board is come Sunday, Jets plus whatever money you can get.
Well, did you see the Super Bowl odds?
Super Bowl odds right now, the Jets were 7-1.
Oh, Sal just sent me updated from one of the sites, and the Jets were plus 400 and the Vikings were plus 450. Jets had better odds.
Really?
On this site, so I don't know.
Well, that was sent out last night, so I haven't checked since this morning. I haven't checked.
I think there's
last
been
night,
Jets action. It's moved. It was 7, but now I think it's 4-1.
Man,
now what? Do we know what the Jets were at the start of the season? They had to have been at least 30-1, right?
At least. Well, they had to be in the lower end. I don't think the Jets even had, like, I'm trying to think of what the Jets over under win total was, and that'll give you a good indication of what people were thinking about when, like, as far as the season began, because you know, if their win total isn't that high, then the odds in the Super Bowl, people aren't going to be thinking about them at all.
And I know their win total.
7.5.
Which
one? On the season total.
Yeah, yeah, I know that because I was in Vegas before the season, and my friend Jim Grady, Jets fan, wagered heavily on the Jets over-under. All right, it was only $20, but still, it was a token bet, and he was like, "No, I feel good. I like Sanchez. I like Rex Ryan." But so yeah, it had to have been at least, I'm going to say maybe 40-1, something like that.
It's entirely possible. I mean, they're never going to get higher than 50-1 because nobody wants to pay out huge wagers anymore. They don't want to have, like we've talked about before.
Yeah.
They don't want to have those Rams, you know, payouts for future bets anymore.
So, who do you think the public will be jumping on this weekend?
Oh, definitely going to be jumping on the Colts. To me, that's a no-brainer. I think the money on the Saints and Vikings will be pretty even. I think at the end of the day, they're going to jump on the Saints because it's home field, because the Saints had number one seed, because they have Drew Brees. But I don't think it's going to be so much that the line is going to change that significantly. But to me, without a doubt, they're going to jump on the Colts. I think Peyton Manning in the dome, at home, you know, there's no reason they won't. It's like when you get outside the coast, it's the same thing in politics. When you get outside the coast and you're talking to people in the middle of the country, they're going to go with the team that is most popular and that is favored. And that's going to be the habit from now until the end of time when you're talking about gamblers.
Is there a best-case scenario matchup for Vegas that will get even more money drawn in than usual, or does it not matter?
You mean for the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Well, I think if you're going to get – you want to get Peyton Manning and Brett Favre.
That draws in even casual people who might not even care?
Oh, yeah, because everybody knows who Brett Favre is. Everybody knows who Peyton Manning is. And as great as Drew Brees is, he's still a great football player. He hasn't transcended that second level of stardom. If he wins the Super Bowl, he will – but he hasn't transcended that second level of stardom the way that Manning and Favre have. I mean, Drew Brees right now is Dan Fouts. You know, he's a great, great quarterback who has a lot of respect amongst football fans, and he'll be on magazine covers, but he's not a guy who carries the day the way Favre or Manning will. Those guys will get that is a, you know, huge, huge day for the books if they can get those two quarterbacks playing. I mean, the Super Bowl is nothing but casual fans making as many bets as possible, and casual fans need to be engaged, and they're going to be engaged when the biggest stars are playing.
So they'll have all kinds of stuff, probably some props directly related to Favre and Manning.
So many props directly related to Favre and Manning. I'm actually doing a column this week for the magazine about sort of history of prop bets and what prop bets are and why people play them and how they get made. And that would be a huge, huge play for Vegas. Because that's where they make, you know, you talk to the guys at the Hilton, they're going to get, you know, heavy seven-figure action on Super Bowl Sunday. And 50 to 60% of that is going to be on prop bets. It's not even going to be on sides or totals. It's only going to be on prop bets. You know, who's going to, is the first play going to be a pass or is it going to be a run? And is it going to be, if it's a run, is it going to be more than 3 yards? And if it's a pass, is it going to be more than 9 yards? I mean, those are the biggest plays for the books on those days.
You're going to tell the refrigerator Perry story?
The refrigerator Perry story where the books practically went bankrupt from the refrigerator Perry prop where they put it up 30-1 that the fridge would score a touchdown, and by the day of the game, the odds were down to 2-1. And when when he scored the touchdown, books all over Vegas were paying out six-figure props to people in the books because they had all been betting Refrigerator Perry because there wasn't a more famous football player in the world that season.
Yeah, and that was really when even though they lost a ton of money, that's when prop bets became famous.
Oh, they became, yeah, that's exactly when they became huge.
It's
I'm still bitter about that play because as a kid growing up in Chicago and as a Bears fan, I thought it was tragic that Mike Ditka would not give the ball to Walter Payton.
Yep.
I think he regrets that.
I'm sure he does, especially because Refrigerator Perry is wherever the hell he is now. I mean, that was a guy that was a comet. Within 2 years, I think he was out of the league.
Yeah. Completely. I mean, you know, he was a great athlete, but he wasn't a guy that you give the ball to as a gimmick in the Super Bowl when you've got a Hall of Famer who hasn't gotten a chance to score at the goal line to get the ball. It's ridiculous.
Well, I can tell you as a Pats fan that whole game was like just being beaten, being beaten with reeds by multiple people torturing me. But the Fridge Perry touchdown pushed it over the top. But that was like getting hit by an anvil.
Well, you guys did score first.
We hit a field goal, and Lynn Dawson blows out his knee on what would have been a touchdown, reaching for it, and just collapses, and we would have been up 7-0.
Yeah.
But it's a bad sign when the guy, when it goes from a touchdown to a blown out knee for your starting tight end, who's your blocker. Anyway.
I think it's a bad sign when the quarterback is Tony Eason.
Well, that is also a bad sign.
Yeah.
So your picks for this week, tentatively, maybe?
Tentatively, I'm going with the Jets to cover against all my, every fiber of my being. And I'd probably go with the Vikings to cover, too.
Over-unders?
Over-under, I would go with the Saints-Vikings under, and I'd go with
Well, what are they giving to us?
Oh, I think it's 52.5 is what it opened at. It's probably about 52 now, maybe still 52.5 for Saints-Vikings. And I think the total for the Jets-Colts was about 41, 41.5. I'd go with the under for both.
So you're
telling
me.
I'm the over better. I had the over in the Saints cards. I just think both of these games are going to go over. I think the Vikings defense is so good that even if, you know, the Saints get on a roll, I think it's still going to be an under game.
So you're telling me I could have the Saints potentially getting 6 if that line goes, settles at 4. I could have the Colts getting between 2, 2.5, 3. And then I can have the Colts, Jets over under. I could go under, and they'd have to score 52 to beat me.
You're talking about on a teaser.
3-team teaser. 10 points.
It sounds like you could get that, which would be a great
That's
play.
A pretty good bet. If you could get that Jets Colts line up to 52, I really find it hard. That basically 27-24 pushes. I mean, I find it hard to believe that they would score more points than that.
I can't see the Jets scoring that many points when the Colts are actually playing at full strength.
Yeah.
You look back to that game they had in the regular season where Peyton Manning left in the middle of the third quarter. It was 15-10 when he left. And neither team was shooting the lights out. I mean, it was a very competitive game. It was 9-3 at halftime when both teams were at full strength. And, you know, it was that Brad Smith kickoff return to start the second half that turned it into a 10-9 game, and then Peyton Manning came right back, scored, it was 15-10, and then that's when he went out, and that's how the game ended up, was 29-15 or whatever it was. And, you know, those teams were not going to score 41 points even in that game.
Right. Yeah. So
I think that would be a great teaser for you.
It's not a bad teaser. Plus, those teams take their time. You always want the two teams, you want the under, the two teams that are taking the 30, 35 seconds per play.
Right. Well, also, that's the thing about Peyton Manning is he likes those long drives.
Yeah.
You know, and those are sort of mother's milk to him, and that's huge to the Colts. And their strategy and is to wear teams down and go on long drives. They're not a quick strike team. And so even if they score 3 touchdowns, it could be 3 touchdowns that are scored on 7-minute drives. You know, you're looking at a good opportunity there.
Chad Millman, when are you talking to Fezzik?
You know, I'll probably talk to him later this week. I called him last night. I emailed him this morning. I haven't heard back yet, but, you know, he'll make some. I might see him. I'm going to go to Vegas for the Super Bowl, so hopefully I'll see him out there.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Vegas.
Look at you.
I'm going to go to Vegas. You know, VM Resort has this in-game wagering stuff. You can put money into account when the game starts, and then you can bet on the game as it goes on, practically on every play.
So I've been dying to do that. I even wrote about that.
I'm going out for the Super Bowl, and I'm going to put money into account. I'm going to live blog and, you know, wager as I go, and I'm going to ask people to send me their ideas before the game happens, because I'm actually not allowed to take ideas during the game. It's against the law. Had a whole meeting with lawyers and the gaming commissioner and everything just to get it figured out.
Are you going to charge all of this to Neil Fine's expense account?
Probably.
That's a great idea.
I did
idea.
Ask. I'm like, so any way I can get, like, the magazine to put the money into an account for me? And I asked Fine and Gary Belsky, the editor-in-chief, and they both looked at me like, no, there's no way. You're lucky we're paying for you to go to the Super Bowl in Vegas, let alone have your money go in there.
Those guys are jerks.
It's all going to be my
money.
I don't miss
either of them. No, I'm kidding. I love those guys. Anyway, that's nice of them that they allowed you to do that.
Yeah, that's good. It'll be a good time. If nothing else, I'll come back broke.
Belsky could be a mensch from time to time.
Sometimes.
Time to time.
Don't tell him.
Occasionally.
Don't let it go to his head.
Chad Memo, we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you later. Thanks.
Target to center. Whoa!
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
You laughed, you cried, you turned up the sound repeatedly, and now it's all over. This concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just-breaking news. Subway is home to the famous $5 footlong, so celebrate your favorite Subway famous $5 footlong, like the classic BLT or the Big Bowl Black Forest ham and cheese. All stacked your way with the meats, cheeses, and fresh, crisp veggies you love.